what if your biggest obstacles were actually your greatest opportunity for growth? Today, we're going to explore how the walk-on method can help you turn every setback into your secret weapon for success, showing you how to not just overcome challenges, but use them to push you further than you ever thought was possible. Welcome to the Learn It All podcast, the show for today's leaders who want to get ahead. And to do so, they know that you got to be continuously learning because great leaders aren't born or made. They're constantly in the making. I'm your host, Damon Lemby. I'm a two-time best-selling author and CEO of Learn It, a live learning platform that has upskilled over 2 million people over the past 3 decades. Joining me today is Jim Roddy. Jim is a CEO, business coach, and author of 2 books, including his latest book, The Walk-On Method to Career and Business Success. Like the name of his book, Jim was a college basketball walk-on. He's also a cancer survivor and all-around great guy. During our conversation, I joke with Jim. I say, you know, as a Division I college scholarship athlete in baseball, I didn't like the walk-ons because they always work so hard and they push us to work harder. And that's exactly what Jim's book is about. We do a deep dive into the 5 steps of the walk-on method. And Jim also shares a couple of the real life stories from his book of underdogs who achieved great success through grit and perseverance. Jim also shares how to build self-confidence through hard work and resilience. We talk about how you reframe setbacks as learning experiences to help you grow and so much more. You're gonna love this conversation with Jim. So let's dive right in. So for those out there who aren't familiar with what a walk-on is, can you start off by explaining that?
Sure, happy to do it. So in the United States, the NCAA, you know, and NAI, the two governing bodies, there are schools that give away athletic scholarships at certain levels. A walk-on is somebody who is not recruited by the coaches. They don't receive a scholarship. They ask to try out for the team and do everything they can in order to make the team. And oftentimes they're the ones who get the least playing time. They do the least fun things in practice. They have a lot of times the hardest hill to climb, but they're the ones who have the most passion out of anybody on the team. So I am a walk-on myself, a 4-year walk-on as well at a Division II small college basketball, Gannon University in my hometown of Erie, Pennsylvania. So that is what a walk-on, and I've lived it, and I'm fortunate to have crossed paths with a lot of walk-ons throughout my career.
Yeah, in your book, I believe you interviewed 31 walk-ons to get their story. And I'm going to get to it in a second about what inspired you to write your book and everything like that. But one question, as somebody who was a scholarship athlete that was out there, and I really admire the walk-ons, but how does somebody, whether in sports or business, you know, develop that mindset that says that even though, like you said, I'm not going to be playing on Friday night, I'm still going to go out there and I'm going to show up and give it 100%. How do you somebody develop that type of mindset?
That's a good question. So, and I think anybody can develop it, right? Or some folks are born with, you know, a little bit of a natural, you know, tendency to move in that direction, and other people aren't. I think really what it comes down to is, first, there's a humility to it that you say, even if I fall short, even if I'm not the best one out there, there's something that I'm going to pull from this experience or something that I'm going to be able to contribute as well. But if all you're looking for is to be the number one, the smartest person in the room, the best person in whatever, that's not going to be a good thing for you. So it's fine to look around and recognize that you are not one of the best, but figure out how can I fit, how can I help. And then just whenever time, you know, you're going to experience some sort of failure, you're going to experience getting, you know, beat up on or ignored or things of that nature, being able to compartmentalize that and just move on and move forward. And so there's a lot that ties in with the exact walk-on method, but to me, it really starts there. I mean, my daughter is now a freshman in college. She's talking about getting into different things and, you know, talk about running for, you know, student government or something. And one of her classmates said, but you might fail, you might fall short. And she's like, okay, I might, but it's better than not doing anything. And so that's what I think it really starts with, that mindset of not being afraid to fail, or knowing that when you do fail, you're going to learn from it, you can go and adjust.
I think that is so key, what you just said. And I'm trying to teach my daughter the same thing. She's a lot younger, she's 7. But what I've found throughout my life is that you got to figure out how to get yourself out of the comfort zone. And I think too many times people worry about, oh, if I fail, you know, I embarrass myself, people will laugh at me. But Jim, at the end of the day, who cares, right? And, you know, you have to learn how to be comfortable with failure, because I really think that that's where learning really comes in, and that's where where growth happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing that helps people, because I've been teaching this over the years, a lot of times people think outside my comfort zone is the panic zone, right? But really outside the comfort zone, you should aim for the courage zone, something that makes you a little bit nervous, but it's not so far away that you should be panicking about it, right? For you and me, we shouldn't say, you know what, we want to be surgeons. They wheel us into a surgery room and go, all right, got the patient open, right? We should be panicking. The nurses should be panicking. The patient especially should be panicking. But if there are things that we can do that take us a step outside and stretch that comfort zone into the courage zone, that's where the real learning happens. And that's where we also don't lose our mind as well, being overwhelmed that it's too hard or way too high. It's one step at a time, making little steps in progress there.
I think that's key. It's like, especially if you have a big goal, like which I know is step one, I'm getting ahead of myself, is that you want to have a big goal, but you also want to have little mini steps, milestones along the way. So going back to your book, and here's what I liked about your book. I thought it was very accessible. Right, it was something that I could relate to. Hey, anybody who puts in the effort and has the control within themselves can make this happen and be successful. And whether, you know, even though it's called the walk-on method and it's 31 athletes, whether you're in sports, and this is for our listeners out there, whether you're in sports or you're not in sports, I really think that the five steps that you have in your book could apply to anybody in their careers. So what inspired you to write this book?
It's a good question. But before I get to the inspiration, I will say, just as a point, I made sure I tested the book before I published it. I wrote a few sample chapters. I intentionally shared them with people who had zero interest in sports whatsoever, because I wanted to see was if it was accessible and relatable to them, then I thought I had something. If it was something only people who pay attention to, you know, Division III lacrosse, you know, and you have to know the intricacies of it, then it wouldn't be any fun at all. So yeah, so I definitely tested it there. I didn't guess as to what I thought was going to be relatable or accessible. I made sure that it wasn't. I got good feedback and was able to adjust along the way. So what kind of motivated me was, so the first book that I wrote, it was actually going back 10 years ago. I wrote a book called Hire Like You Just Beat Cancer. So it's H-I-R-E. It was a hiring best practices book. And it was written in part in my experience as a hiring manager, but it's also through the lens of being a cancer surviving executive, which I am now for 22 years. I'm a colon cancer survivor. And so I had folks...
Congratulations, Jim.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I always give credit to, we were talking about surgeons. Surgeons and the nurses, they're the ones who took care of me. I just kind of sat there, lied there. They knocked me out and got everything done. But I appreciate that. So when that book came out, there were a lot of folks in the business world that I had run with. They didn't know that I had cancer, right? It's not something you exactly weave into a conference call, right? And so I had folks who said, wow, now I understand why you're driven like you are, why you behave the way that you are. And I remember thinking like, well, thank you. But I thought, I don't wake up every day thinking like, I'm a cancer survivor and I got to overcome it and things of that nature. I mean, I had that mindset to some degree when I was going through the chemo and all sorts of stuff like that, but that wears off over time. And I thought, what really has been the key to my success? Why do I behave the way that I do? And I look back and it mirrored the process that I had walking on, you know, back in the day. This was the late 1980s, early 1990s. Like I said, a Division II Gannon University, a small college basketball powerhouse. And so I originally thought, maybe I should just do an entire book on my story. And then I thought, who's going to be like, ooh, great, I can't wait to read about Jim Roddy's story and all that. Then I thought, well, maybe I should test it and see. My story could be one of the stories, but are there other folks, right? Because I could just be, somebody could say he got lucky. It's, you know, an anomaly. So I decided to find five walk-ons and interview them and see if their experience as a walk-on paid off in their professional career. I also made sure they had to be in the workforce at least 5 years as well. And so I did five interviews and I was like, man, these stories are great. In fact, they're better than mine. And then I did five more. I'm like, these are great stories as well. And the snowball kept going and going. And once I had 30 stories, then I was like, I really think I have a great variety here to tell as well in terms of young, old, male, female, a wide variety of sports, all sorts of different angles that they came to become a walk-on that really made it that somebody could find at least one, if not multiple stories in the book that they could relate to and they could start patterning their life after and really help accelerate folks. So that was the motivator behind the book, and initially to clear up a misunderstanding, but then hopefully to inspire others to figure out what is on their own career path to success.
I listened to your interview with Jeff Reed on Lead to Read, and I got a big chuckle out of you said that you put your story at the end because you weren't going to write 250-page book on just your story.
That is correct. Yes. Yes.
I want to take a step back for all you leaders out there. One of the things that Jim said at the very beginning of this was that when he tested his book, he wrote a couple of chapters and then he went out to people and asked for feedback, which I think is so critical as a leader to be able to be vulnerable enough to be able to share something with somebody and open up in a way that people feel comfortable giving feedback. Do you have any tips for others out there on how to, let's say, receive feedback?
Sure. Well, first I'll say is, you know, we were taught in school, you couldn't look off somebody else's paper. You can say, hey, what answer did you get? And be able to compare notes, right?
But I did that all the time. I got in a little trouble for that, though.
Right. But, yeah. You get in trouble, you get your hand slapped, right? The nun comes over with the ruler, right? And smacks you on the knuckles. But cheating is legal, right, in the business world. Like, don't take that out of context. But you can compare notes. You can ask other people, can you look at this and give me feedback on it? And so this is where the walk-on experience does tie in as well, right? You watch film and the coach critiques you in film and you're like, well, this is the path to success, right? And you quickly become very accustomed to doing that. I also have a writing background as well. You become very accustomed to sharing your story with somebody else and they're putting all sorts of red marks all over it and asking questions. So there's a real thing of, number one is understanding you don't have to guess, do people like this? Are people going to understand this? How is this going to resonate with people? You just go out and test it. And ask them, and they'll give you the answer, right? You don't have to have all the answers yourself. So that's why I think some humility, again, comes in there, where you have to say, I don't have all the answers. I don't know for sure that people are going to like this. And you go in and test it with them. And then also, I'd say, when you get the feedback, is to always try it on, right? Even if initially you're like, this doesn't ring right, try it on and be like, well, maybe it is. Let me think through that. And maybe if somebody's saying, you know, reduce this thing by 50%. Well, maybe you only need to reduce it by 10%, but reducing it is probably the right thing to do. So there's an element of you have your principles that you want to stick to, because some people might not know exactly what you're going for, but run it through that filter, but sincerely run it through the filter. Don't get into this, you know, dismissive. Right. Right. And I have to be right. So that to me is a real thing. And again, if you get that experience of having people give you all sorts of criticism, it's no big deal, right? Getting criticism now. I've been doing it for so many years. I actually feel bad when people don't give negative feedback or don't ask some tough questions.
I think humility is one of the key traits in any industry, as a leader, realizing that you don't have all the answers. And the last thing I'll say about it, when I was writing my book, I was trying to think about who I wanted the target reader to be. And I gave it to an individual on my team, Nick Silverthorne. And I said, give me some honest feedback. And he let me have it in a good way, though, right? He's like, this doesn't make sense. This is boring. You need to have more how-to. So I think that you don't have to have all the answers. And I love that book out there called Steal Like an Artist. You know, it's kind of like looking at somebody's page. You don't have to do it all on your own. And you can just learn and adapt. So, right? Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I had a colleague who actually said, if you have an idea that is wholly original, it's probably wrong. That's what he always said, like, it's probably more an iteration of something else. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with sending something out to the market, getting the feedback, and making adjustments. One of my favorite books is called Getting to Plan B. And so it talks about you have your original plan A, but as it continues to interact with the market, you're getting feedback, you keep making adjustments along the way. Oftentimes plan B is considered lesser, but if you follow that path, your plan is to get to plan B, because you know plan A before it touches the market or gets any feedback is going to be worse than actually what plan B is.
Totally. And I think your plan or your strategy is always iterating. You always want to iterate on it. And I think Mike Tyson had that great quote that everybody's got a plan or a strategy until you get punched in the face. And then you
exactly
gotta,
right. Yeah. Exactly right. The only Mike Tyson quote worth repeating.
Yeah. He's making a comeback though. He's making a comeback supposedly. So walk us through your five steps.
Sure. So the five steps to the walk-on method. And the way that I like to do this, Damon, is I quickly share the concept and then I'll give an example after each one of them, because that really makes it come to life. So step number one is take a big shot, right? Because anybody can make a layup. Don't sell yourself short. Don't aim for something safe. Don't play it safe. You really need to take a big shot. An example that I have of that in the book is Colleen Healy. She was from Connecticut. She was from a family that was middle class or lower middle class. Nobody had ever been to college before. And she was a very, very good athlete. She took the first offer that she had to go to a Division II school to play both softball and basketball. And she was getting a lot of playing time there as her freshman year, having a great start to the season. But she thought to herself, I want to do better. I can do better. So she, after one of the games in the middle of winter, packed up everything she could in her car, started driving home, and then her car broke down and then her car caught on fire. She got a lift from somebody and they took her to a friend's at a college campus. She got to call her parents and say, hey, mom and dad, you know that scholarship I had for college? I gave it up. I'm quitting. Because I want to try to play basketball at the University of Connecticut. Oh, and by the way, the car's on fire. Can you come pick me up? And we have to go get a mechanic for it. But long story short, she walked on to the UConn women's basketball team, which anybody who isn't familiar with it, that is like the epitome, the number one women's basketball sports program. And she was a role player. She went from being Miss Everything at a smaller Division II school to really being a role player if she ever got playing time on that team. And that is a team that ended up taking off and becoming, again, one of the greatest programs. And again, what she did was she took that experience to say she never thought she would leave the state of Connecticut. She ended up moving to Florida. She ended up becoming a very, very strong performer in the pharmaceutical industry. And then she's also spun that off into a leadership and speaking career, right? So the girl who a lot of people said she'll never make in college, she's not college material, like she's got a ceiling, she's crashed through that ceiling, all because first she took that big shot. When if you would have run it through the logic filter, 99% of people would have said, no, 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 play it safe, play it safe. She took a big shot and she's been succeeding ever since.
There's that great quote out there, right? I can't remember exactly what it is. It's, shoot for the moon and you might land in the stars anyways. So essentially what she did and what we're talking about is, you know, if you just go for a layup, that's all you're going to get, right? But if you're going to try to shoot a three-pointer, you know, you're never going to go beyond if you just don't set your sights as high as possible. Can you give us an example of what that looks like in the business world?
Sure. So one thing that I coach oftentimes in, I work in for a retail technology association as a CEO, and oftentimes my business coaching comes into play. I say all the time, try, test, measure, adapt. Try, test, measure, adapt. And like step number one is, for the love of God, do something, right? Like try something that a successful business is doing and see how it integrates into your organization, right? It doesn't have to be some wild risk in terms of, can I jump out of a plane without a parachute and still land on my 2 feet, right? You don't have to be ridiculously risky with that, but you have to try something. And so that's what, you know, inside our own organization, we have an idea. We always try to run it through critical thinking, right? Do we fully understand the best practices? Do we fully understand the situation? What outcomes are we looking for? And then once we know where that is, then we can start following through in terms of what are the actions and then keep iterating along the way. But that really what I think is the first step is saying we have to do something that's going to better our business and better our organization. Let's take a risk and try this thing. Not you put the whole company, you know, on a roulette wheel on black and spin, but it has to be a calculated risk. And then you got to do the work, right, in order to prepare it. It's not just going to try this one thing, cross my fingers and hope that it happens. And that's a lot you'll see as we get deeper into the walk-on method. You really see that these walk-ons weren't just somebody who hopped out of bed and said, I'm going to give this a shot. They put in all the work. that gave them the confidence, and it almost, they felt like they deserved to have success because of all the work, all the prep work that they did and put in. So that's what I'd say from a business standpoint. If you want to try to do something, do all the research, do all the work, get all the feedback, so you have a really good gauge in terms of, I am prepared, right? Nobody could be more humanly prepared than I am right now to take this venture on.
I like to call it purposeful awfulizing. You know, if you're going to take a big risk, fast forward a year and a half and say, if I completely fail at this, can I survive that? And if you can survive that, go for it. Now, how do you, let's look at it from somebody who maybe wants to get into leadership, but they have limited beliefs of saying like, well, I don't know if I'm qualified for this. What advice would you give for them to take a big shot, either to leave the job that they're at, you know, say they have enough money saved so they can survive it, but how do you get over those limited beliefs to stick your neck out there and do it?
I mean, I get into do the work, and the work is going to tell you whether you should do that or not, right? And when I say do the work, there's an element of reading, right? Are you reading a lot of books? Are you talking to a lot of folks about, you know, getting their opinion, getting their feedback? Are you listening to podcasts? Are you improving yourself as a speaker? Or are you just showing up saying, this is what I am, this is what you got, and well, let's see how it works out. So to me, there's no substitute for that. I say all the time in a lot of my coaching, there's no substitute for a competent person getting closer to a situation, right? So get really close to the situation, figure out what skills you need for that, what experiences you need for that, and then just go and develop them and build them. And that doesn't even guarantee success. My assistant coach at Gannon, John Riley, he's now the head coach at Division II Christian Brothers. He would always say to us, we have to work this hard, this extremely hard, just to have a chance at success. It doesn't guarantee success, but it gives you a chance. So that's a lot to me of what it is rooted in. And a lot of these walk-on stories, like there are threads that went throughout it. Nobody just, again, fell out of bed, showed up, and they're like, hey, I made the team. They put in many, many hours of work when nobody else was watching. Actually, I can't quote it, but it's in the front of my book. I can't quote any poetry. It's the only poetry in the book. But it talks about, right, while others slept, they were the ones toiling during the night anonymously. That would be my recommendation for folks. If you really want to do something, put in the work in advance. If you do that, you're going to increase your chance of success. It doesn't guarantee it, but it also gives you that confidence in terms of, you know, nobody's worked harder than me. That's what I had when I tried out for the Gannon basketball team. I knew a lot of those guys played a lot of basketball, but I'm like, nobody's put in the work that I has. I deserve a shot at making this team.
So the first two, we've talked about two of the most important traits as leaders, humility and work ethic. Before we get to step two, a quick story I want to share is I have a friend who was 500th in the world playing tennis, and his tennis career ended. He didn't make any money on it, and he got into investment banking. I got an interview for investment banking, and he sat down with one of these head guys. He got the interview because of somebody knew him from tennis, and the guy interviewing him said, "Why should I hire you? I've got 30 MBAs lined up who went to Ivy League schools." And you know what he said, Jim? He said, "Because I will outwork every one of them." And he said to me, he said, "Damon, that's what I did. I just worked harder than everybody out there. And I wasn't guaranteed success, but I created my own luck." He's like, "I don't think there's any such thing as luck. I created my own luck." And that always stuck with me, telling that, because being humble and work ethic is so important. So let's go on to step number two.
Well, and that story segues perfectly into step number two. So step number two is make a passion statement with a P, not a fashion statement. And so it's prepare with passion, practice with passion, and then play with passion, right? And we've alluded to this before. Don't wish that your dream is going to come true, right? Don't give your all only when the opportunity presents itself. Don't wish for a dream. Walk on to that dream. And a great example of that is Sean Bedford. And so he ended up being a walk-on at Georgia Tech. He wanted to go to Notre Dame, but Notre Dame wouldn't return any of his calls or letters or outreaches or anything of that nature. And in fact, at Georgia Tech, they weren't even really interested in having him on the team. He happened to get a really good academic scholarship, a president's scholarship, so he was able to go to school at a reduced cost. But then when he was on the team, he was sixth string on the defensive side and he even wanted to play defense.
Sixth string?
Sixth string. Yes, he went like that deep. You know,
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't even sniffing the sidelines, let alone the field. You know, he was that far back from everybody else. But he said, "What can I do? How can I outwork everybody else?" And so the guys who are that low on the roster, they know they're never going to play. They put them on the scout team. So all they do is mimic what the other team is going to do. Well, he made sure he studied extra film on the opponents. He went not just to see what their first string would do, he saw what their second string would do. And he was the best scout player you could possibly be. And that caught the coaches' attention. And then they had some injuries and issues on the offensive side of the ball. And one of the coaches, the head coach, said, "You know, would you ever like to play offense?" He said, "That's actually what I would like to do. Like, that's what I did all in high school." He ended up moving over to the other side of the ball where he was like fourth string center, but slowly but surely worked his way up. And then his college career, he wanted to go to law school and he got waitlisted. And when he got waitlisted for law school, right, a lot of people are like, "Well, maybe I shouldn't be a lawyer. Maybe I won't go to this school." And he said, "Hey, wait a second. This is exactly what I went through at Georgia Tech for football, right? They essentially waitlisted me, put me way back in the sixth string, said, 'You're never going to be anything.' And I outworked it. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to outwork these folks here as well." So while he was waitlisted, he ended up graduating the top 10% of his class because he said, "I made sure I'd outwork everybody." And he had a leave no stones unturned approach. And he does that now as an attorney. He also got a degree in aerospace engineering as well. And he did color commentary for the Georgia Tech football team. So that guy made all his dreams come true. He didn't wish they would come true. He actually made them by outworking everybody every minute of the day. He said he didn't sleep as much as his teammates or his classmates, but he's as successful, not more successful than they are today.
I've seen that in my own career, where I was when I was at Arizona State, some of the most talented players on our team, first round draft choices, they were the guys rolling in 5 minutes before practice started. You know, and at that level, they could be great, right? They could do fine. But as they moved forward in minor leagues and the big leagues, they just couldn't compete anymore because they didn't have the mindset or the work ethic. And that carries over into your professional career as well. One of the things that I liked that you were talking about is that if, as a scout player, how important that is, listeners out there, because you're making if you're taking the approach of you're making your team better because you're competing in practice with them to give them the opportunity to do well in the games. And taking that approach, I think really, you know, that makes a difference between a good company, a good team, and a great team is when everybody realizes, and you have a coach that helps everybody realize that they have an important role on their team.
Exactly right. Yes. And again, you might not have the most experience, you might not be the most skilled, but you can put in the work, you can help set the pace for that. And again, that's part of my experience as a walk-on. A lot of the scholarship guys would be like, "Hey, let's take it easy today." And I was like, "I can't take it easy any day," because I always thought they were looking for an excuse to throw me out. They didn't need me, you know, on the court. But if I was able to set the pace a day when guys wanted to jog, I kept sprinting and it would show them how they were dogging it and they knew. And I would get looks from time to time. I can remember our starting point guard give me this look like, "Slow down." I'm like, nope, not doing that, right? Because that was my role. That was the job that I was playing. I'd say another thing that you touched on, Damon, is the difficult situations. And I remember interviewing, I used to have a sports magazine. That was the first business that I had started, and interviewing a coach and saying, "How come all these kids that are great in middle school, like, don't become good in high school?" And he said, "Because their coaches know they're really good going to their right hand. And so all they do is run plays for them going to the right hand instead of in practice making the kid work on their left hand." He said, "You get to a higher level, someone's going to force you to go to your left. You can't go to your left. And suddenly you're like, ooh, a challenge. It's not easy." And then those kids collapse. He said, the kids who get challenged, right, and develop their full skills, those are the ones who become successful long term. So I guess that's a message for leaders out there in terms of, are you figuring out where you can shore up, and are you challenging your people so they actually can get better, right? Do they have the opportunity? Do you give them the opportunity to make a passion statement, or are you just having them fill in the whatever blanks you want them to fill in?
That kind of goes, and I don't want to skip over three, but that kind of goes into number four, right? Where, maximizing your strengths, but you're also saying that on the flip side of that is that you need to shore up your weaknesses, either you know, help that individual improve in their weaknesses, or make sure that you have somebody else on your team, a more diverse skill set on your team, to be able to overcome those, because everybody can't be great at everything all the time.
That is correct, 100%. I'm a big fan of strengths finders. In fact, the school my daughter is attending, Meredith College, here in Raleigh, North Carolina, they have all the students take a strengths finders test, and then they counsel them on how to maximize their strengths throughout their four-year career, which I think is absolutely fabulous. But again, you know, as building a team, right, you can have, you know, from a football standpoint, everybody can't be the greatest kicker, right? Because then no one's going to be able to block or throw or run or anything of that nature. So yeah, as you're building a team, have people maximize their strengths. But at the same point, if somebody can get better in an area, by all means, work at that area. Don't just say, oh, I'm not good at that, and so forever. You know, that's the fixed mindset in terms of, because I am here, I'm never going to get any better. Always work and lean into that, because I think it also builds a skill of resilience, of, you know, step number three is running uphill, of taking on those challenges and not backing down from them. I think that in itself is a great business skill to have, you know, beyond finance or sales or marketing and things of that nature, right? Being able to face obstacles and not back down from them, I think that's an important skill for leaders and for everybody in an organization.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Give us an example.
Sure. So I'll give an example. So, and this ties in with step number three. It's called run uphill, and it says takes longer, but it makes you stronger. Where this step comes from is back when I was running cross country as a middle schooler. So anybody who does running, you know, you pass people on the flat surfaces, but when you're going uphill, that's when everybody slows down and kind of trudges up the hill. I got in my mind at one point, I'm like, what if whenever I get these hills, instead of being like, a hill, I'm like, ooh, a hill, and I'm going to sprint up this hill as fast as I can. Like, why not? And so I started doing that in training, and it was painful in training. But you start doing that in a meet, I mean, you want to intimidate people, and they're like, oh my gosh, like, who is this superhuman who's actually sprinting past me on the hill? And so the lesson is, don't avoid obstacles. Don't seek the path of least resistance, right? Lean into the difficulties of the situation and embrace those obstacles. And so you and I were talking earlier off camera before we started recording, where you were saying, like, a lot of times the scholarship players look down on the walk-ons. After I got done with this book, I almost felt sorry for scholarship people, like, oh, too bad they had the easy path, right? They didn't get to learn all these lessons, right? And so by going through these, having to, you know, have obstacles in your way and not somebody clearing them all out for you, you learn how to confront or convert problems. You learn how to turn them into opportunities and victories. And once you do that one time, you know you can do it again. And then you do it again and again. And so anytime there's an obstacle or something terrible that comes up, you just say, well, we have to figure our way out of this. I was brand new named president of a company, of a publishing company, 50 plus employees, moved into a brand new building in 2008, right before the Great Recession, right? And so, you know, that is like the biggest, you know, business obstacle I've ever overcome. I don't want to have to do that again, but that has given me a lot of confidence for anything that goes on, you know, in the business world from here. It's almost like, well, we figured that out before, I guess we'll figure this out as well. So if you're constantly cowering from obstacles or hiding or not even stepping forward that you could run into an obstacle, you're never going to build that skill. And at some point, the obstacle is going to find you. So I'd say go find it now, build up that skill. So when you do have one that you can't get away from, you can figure it out. So I don't know if that answers your question, Damon, but I'm a huge fan of that.
Can you give us an example of one of the biggest obstacles you had in 2008? I remember that time very, very well.
Yeah, so I can specifically remember, there's a lot of things I can remember, some I'm trying to repress, but one of them was we had our monthly steering committee meeting where we looked at the financials, and things weren't getting better, but we're always like, maybe they'll get better in a month, right? Maybe they'll get better in a month, and one more month. And so one of our owners was in that meeting. He went back after the meeting and talked with his brother, who is the other owner of the company. And I remember they called me up a half hour before we had our company-wide lunch. And they said, like, we really did the math, and we've been through recessions before. We know you haven't. And the deal is, we have to reduce in 10 days. I can't remember the exact number, but I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, and I said, well, when you say 10 days, you mean 10 business days? They're like, no, we mean 10 days. I'm like, hey, wait a second. There's two weekends in there. You only give me 6 days to really shrink down the company. And so, but the reality was we had two choices. We could have not done the hard thing and not done the layoffs and not slashed expenses, or the whole thing could have gone over the edge. And we said, well, we've got to save this company. And that was the hardest thing to do, was deciding who on the team. We had a great team, you know, great people, hardworking people, but to make the decisions of who couldn't be on the team anymore because the whole ship was going to sink, that was difficult. And then having those conversations was incredibly difficult as well. And the big thing that I learned about that is, and this could be a whole other podcast episode, businesses have to make difficult decisions like that, but we did it for the sake of the entire organization, not to pad our stock profits, right, or our options, or benefit us, or run the stock price up, or something of that nature. So when you have to do difficult things like that, that deliver bad news to people, number one thing is take care of them, make sure they're taken care of physically, financially, and emotionally. And so there are people who I laid off during that time period that I'm still in touch with today, that we help find jobs, we help give official and unofficial counseling to along the way. So maybe that's way more lessons than you wanted in that one thing, but we had to do the hard thing. We had my boss used to say, this business may be run into the ground, but it's not going to be because of my lack of courage. So you have to show the courage, but you have to show the compassion as well. And it's got to be genuine compassion for those people. So whenever you're doing something crummy and involves other people getting caught up in something being crummy, make sure those people are taken care of. They will remember it forever, one way or the other, whether you treat them badly or whether you ignore them or whether you actually take care of them.
I love that story. And Jim, I went through the same thing at Learn It in January 2009. We had about 50, 60, 55 employees. And I was around in the dot-com days to go through that recession. I was lucky. I was fortunate. I had family that could support us financially, you know, but I didn't have that same, I wasn't in that same position in 2009. And so I think this is important for all you leaders out there, is I also didn't want to do it. We knew we had to rip the Band-Aid off and make big changes. And it's much better to do it all at once than it is to kind of spread it out and just make everybody miserable. And as hard as it is, and I feel like I'm a guy like you, Jim, where I care about people, right? You know, I look at them as, I want to be a team over a family in business, but I also really care about people. But I knew, hey, we have to let go 25% of our team, because if I don't, 100% of us are
out. That's right.
Right? So, you know, I sat in, I remember like it was yesterday, one by one, I had the conversations with everybody. And I think it's also important for leaders to be as transparent as possible during those times.
Yes.
Because if you're not transparent, people are wondering what's going on here and there. And I keep in touch with a lot of those people as well. So thank you for sharing that story. I mean, it's a great learning lesson, and it's tough to do, but you've talked about this a lot. You have to make bold, tough decisions. And you have to have the courage to do it, because if you don't have the courage, that's what your team is expecting you to do. They expect you to have that courage. So thank you for sharing that story. I think it was great.
They're counting on you to have that courage. And to your point about transparency, my basketball coach at Gannon my last 30 years, Bob Duquette, the late Bob Duquette, he would say, hey, you might be able to fake it with each other in practice. You might be able to fake me out in practice. When you get in that game, the opponent, they're going to smell you out. Like, so you can either work hard here and get, you know, and have success in the game, or you can dog it here and really get exposed. And that's true in the business world as well, right? If you don't have that sincerity, if you don't have that transparency, your people are gonna smell you out.
And if you don't have that transparency and you don't lead with integrity, then people aren't going to trust you, and people don't want to work for people that they can't trust. So before we move on to step four, I just want to say, I hated guys like you in practice sprinting up the hill. I was thinking about it when you're talking about, we had to run up a mountain at Arizona State.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, but you know what? It pushed me to be better, because I didn't want to lose, and I didn't want to be shown up either.
I take that as a compliment, right?
It because is a compliment.
That's what I was there for. And now I look back, right, as a coach, right, as leaders, because that's what coaches are. And if I'm a coach, man, I need a guy like that on the team, right? And the only reason they really had me on the team was to help with the grade point average and to set that pace in practice. And man, what if everybody had people like that on their team? And the other thing is, all these steps, you know, this, I'm kind of like stealing the punchline of everything with the walk-on method. All this stuff is achievable. You don't need some advanced degree in order to do this. So go ahead and do this. Like, don't hold back in order to do these things. It will pay off for you. It might not pay off for you the next day, but down the road, it's definitely going to pay off.
Yeah. It's what do you call it? Delayed gratification. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. And I love what you said. And it's so true. It's like, we're all capable of doing your steps in the book. And the other thing I like that you said too is you can't just sit there and wait for something to happen, right? Because it's not going to happen. You gotta step out there and make it happen. Two great books before moving on to step two that our conversation remind me of, and I don't typically just throw out a bunch of books in these podcasts, but with you, I enjoy this, is Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. I've read that book like four times. And the other one, I'm going to butcher the name, but it's Bill Walsh's book, The Score Will Take Care of Itself. And what that reminds me of, Jim, is that in that book, he talks about whether you're a maintenance person, a scorekeeper, or Joe Montana, everybody's part of the team and everybody contributes. And if everybody's doing their job, like you're saying, like your job was to make guys like me run harder, right? That's your job. And to bring up, and your job was to bring up the grade point average, which is so true. So I think it's important for coaches and for leaders to look at your team, assess their strengths, and figure out how you can maximize those and all work together. So tell us about No Fuss, All Muss.
Happy to do it. And I will say, I just wrote down that Bill Walsh book and Obstacle Away. Highly, highly recommend. Yeah, that's a fabulous book. So I'm all in on your recommendation. So step four, so no fuss means control your emotions, especially the negative emotions. And then all must, the must is an acronym or an initialism for maximize unique strengths, right? Determine your special ability and maximize it. So the control your emotions, and again, especially the negative ones. As you're encountering these obstacles, as you're doing things that are difficult and uncertain, you're going to want to freak out or shut down or psych yourself out, right? And you have to be able to control that as much as you can and really calm down and put those things aside and not get caught up in the negativity. Other people saying, you should get more playing time. This isn't fair. This isn't right. Skip practice, right? Things of that nature, right? You have to be able to put all that stuff aside and just determine your special ability and maximize it. And so the example that I have for that is Brandon Landry. So he actually got cut from his high school basketball team as a junior. And when he got that news, he could have said, maybe I shouldn't play basketball anymore. He said, you know what I got to do? I guess I got to work harder. And he ended up becoming, you know, a great defensive player, all conference. And then he said, I want to walk on to the LSU basketball team. Tried out, got cut. And he said, you know what? It's probably because I got to work harder. Well, LSU had some injuries. They actually called him back. He was actually at his dad's sugarcane farm, when he got the call, and he's jumping up and down the middle of sugarcane field. Like, we want you only as a practice player. So he comes back as a practice player, and he's trying to compete, but these guys are just overwhelming him physically. And instead of saying, like, well, maybe this isn't for me, right? He says, I got to hit the weight room. I got to get better. And sure enough, he did. He did not become a legendary player at LSU, but he did play there for his entire career. And then we wanted to go into the business world. He had a project about starting a restaurant. And so he and a fellow walk-on on the team came up with a concept of a restaurant, and they got a C for it in the class. And so this is getting back to cheating is legal in business. The professor said, if, you know, once you get the fee, you know, the grade, you can come back to me for coaching on your business plan. Well, like, nobody else did, but they went back and said, how can we turn this into an A, not for the grade, but to actually roll it out? And sure enough, they went and wanted to do a restaurant that's called Walk-On's Bistro, Bistreaux, because it's, you know, down in Baton Rouge. They wanted to start the restaurant. They found a location. Bank one told them no. Bank two told them no. Bank three. Get all the way to six banks, and you'd think, like, we'll give up on this. And they said, no, we've got to work harder. Found a seventh bank. Long story short, he's now the CEO of Walk-On Sports Bistro. Multiple locations, fast growing in the Southeast. They actually just opened a location in Vegas that I visited during my last trip to Vegas. So again, this is a guy who ran into all sorts of obstacles, all sorts of reasons, have excuses and cry about it and whine and complain and point fingers. But he just said, I'm going to figure out how to turn a no into a yes through hard work. This is going to stress me out and figure, not emotionally, but stress me out to figure out where my weakness is. And I'm going to go get better at that. And I'm going to advance to the next step. So that's my man, Brandon Landry, from the aptly named Walk-Ons, hopefully coming to a town near you.
That's awesome. And what I hear you talking about there is, well, first of all, he doesn't suffer from the victim mentality, which correct. so many people do. It just drives me nuts listening to people make excuses instead of just owning up to it. And I get a kick out of him saying, well, maybe I probably just need to work harder. Maybe I just probably need to do this. And the persistence, which I think is so important. Now, do you think that are you born with that, Jim, or is that something you could learn how to change or evolve over time? Or is it something that, I know I'm all over the place here with this, but is it something that parents need to install in their kids early on? How do people get out of that and get into that, not having the victim mentality and being like your buddy Brandon?
The parenting helps, no doubt about it. Or if you're a coach, right, coaching can help because your parents might not be able to influence you that way, but the coach can. And this is the power of leaders. This is also the power of followers, right? And so if you read stories about, and I think this comes from the story Make Your Bed by Admiral William McRaven. I think it's from this book. And he talks about, they have all these soldiers who go through SEAL training and they're in this cold mud and they say, if 10 of us quit, we can all quit now, or we're going to be in this thing for who knows how long. They will encourage each other. Don't quit, don't quit, don't quit. If a guy's like, I got to give up. No, don't give up. That's a thing that we can all do in our team, no matter what level that we are, is to say, hey, let's never be the victim. Let's always take this criticism. Let's always take something that could be a failure. Or we could have a reason to say, yeah, it's their fault, not ours. You know, I say a lot of times, if we're 1% at fault for it, we're 100% at fault for it, right? Don't say, well, here's where we didn't exactly go wrong. And it's really that does not help you out at all. Take full responsibility for it and get better. So it can be developed and we have an opportunity to influence that. Parents can do it the best. Coaches can do it as well, but we all have the ability to lift people up. I used to work down the hallway from a psychotherapist and I would always say, she knew nothing about business. I knew nothing about psychotherapy, but the one, you know, there's a whole bunch of things you realize it crossed over. And we talked about the power of, are you, when you interact with people, are you going to be an energy elevator or are you going to be a soul sucker, right? With all your interactions, you could do one or the other. How are you doing today? Oh, you know, it's another day, right? And so that's just a soul sucker. You can say, I'm doing tremendous. I'm fabulous. How are you doing? So that's what I guess I get back to is we all have the opportunity. Can we, when it comes to this victim mentality, that would be a soul sucker thing. Or do we take responsibility, accountability, put it on ourselves and figure out where can we get better from this situation? That's what an energy elevator does.
And I think it comes down to a lot of self-awareness as well, because sometimes people don't even understand that they're a soul sucker, so to speak. Because I think about just people I know and, you know, you walk into a room with them and right away you're happy to see them because they're always in a good mood or they're just positive. And then other times you run into people at a party and they're just freaking miserable no matter what. Right. And, I just think it's great to have the energy. And I also think that like what you're saying, you could do it yourself, but I think great coaches and leaders and parents also help lead by example. And leading by example is showing the accountability. Like you said, if you're 1% responsible, you're 100% responsible.
Yes, I always wanted to be the most excited player to show up at practice.
I'm sure you were. No,
but there were times, so we would be on defense, and so I'd have to be my defensive stance for hours. Bob Duquette loved defense. And so he'd be running through these things, and my back would hurt so bad, and I did not want to, like, you know, I love basketball, but like, 4 hours a day, 5 hours a day, day after day after day in my defensive stance for three quarters of that. Like that was not good, but I could let it show, but I knew my job was to show up every day and be like, here we go. Like, let's go. Let's touch all the lines. Let's do it.
That's awesome. So let's get into getting thrown out of the gym.
Yeah, so that's step number five. It's make them throw you out of the gym. And the, you know, easier way to say it is never, ever, 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 ever quit. So I've had some people read this and they're like, so why do you want to get thrown out of the gym? I'm like, no, it's make them throw you out. Do not throw yourself out of the gym. There are so many people that I can say this. When I was a walk-on at Gannon, I made sure I played in the recreation center as well. And I ran into all sorts of fellow students who were taller than me, stronger than me, could shoot better than me. They had all sorts of things. But I asked them like, hey, why don't you try for the basketball team? They always had an excuse, a reason. They threw themselves out of the gym. I made sure it was going to be the coaches who threw me out of the gym, and I never ever wanted to quit. And one of my favorite examples from the book is Megan Lightfoot. She was a rower at UCLA. She'd never done any rowing whatsoever. She did like volleyball, softball, basketball, but she figured she wouldn't be able to play any of those at UCLA. And so she said, I'd like to do this sport. And so when she first went and met with one of the assistant coaches, he explained the entire process to her and he said, but I know what's going to happen here. You're going to show up, it's going to be too hard, and then you're going to quit. But, you know, good luck to you. And so she had a choice when she walked out of there. It's like, well, I guess he's talking me out of, you know, rushing a sorority instead of doing this. But she was like, oh, I'm going to prove him wrong. And anybody who's done any rowing with all the salt water and the blisters and all that kind of stuff, she survived the first year. And then she goes back and meets with that coach. And she's like, he's going to go, wow, Megan, you proved me wrong. You're a real go-getter. And he said, well, that's 1 year, but you were in the novice division. You're going to have to move up. I don't ever see that happening either. So if you want to try out again next year, good luck to you. If not, have a good life. Again, she walks out that door. She could have taken one path or the other. I'm going to go do something else. Or she's like, I'm going to prove him wrong. And 4 years later, she earns a partial scholarship. She's one of the captains in the top boat. And again, how does that translate into the beyond sports world? She wanted to be an attorney. She wanted to get into family law. As she's interviewing for a job, similar to your friend, right? They were able to say like, Megan, what do you bring to the table? And she said, all these other people have way, way more experience than me. But let me tell you about this story that I had at UCLA where I knew zero. I knew way less about that than I do about family law. And if you give me the chance, I'm going to build upon that and I'm going to be a super successful family lawyer. And sure enough, to this day, like I interviewed her, gosh, it's going back almost 6 years ago. She continues to move up in the organization as a successful family law attorney. So again, she had many reasons. She was getting all sorts of signals and cues. Go away, beat it. We don't want you here anymore. And she said, I'm going to keep coming back no matter what. I will also say this, and this ties in with a lot of the walk-on stories, another thread that comes through. All of them, almost all of them at some point were like, I'm quitting. This is too hard. Like, I don't want to do this anymore, right? Because all of us do get down to some degree. And most of them had somebody who offered them a word or two of encouragement. And so sometimes you can get that from yourself, but just from the leaders who are listening here, any small word of encouragement to somebody, to tell somebody to keep on going, I have faith in you. I think you can be great at this if you keep putting in the work. You would be stunned at how that, what that means for people. I've heard that feedback in my career. Like people say, you told me this 15 years ago. And I'm like, I don't even remember saying that, but I'm glad you remembered it. Right. So all of us have this burden of, right, not just, you know, making sure we don't ever quit, but also we're encouraging people and we're giving them some wind at their back. So when all that wind is in their face, we're at least pushing them in the right direction, guiding them and giving them some confidence.
That's great. You know, I was interviewing this guy named Dan Turner, CEO of Experigo, a great, great guy. And he said it's a leader's responsibility also to help point out the successes that your team members have. A lot of times, Jim, people don't see what they've accomplished, you know, and you say, hey, you're 28 years old and you've accomplished this, 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 and this. Be proud of that. You know, sometimes people don't see that and they don't have enough confidence in themselves. But as a leader, if you could help people not only understand the potential they have, but help them see some of the successes they have and give them that recognition, that just could help elevate people so much. Exactly what you're saying.
Amen. Generate enthusiasm, increase their commitment. And the best way to do that is by telling somebody, you're doing a great job. Specifically, this thing that you did is great. Keep encouraging people. You do that, they're going to keep doing more and more of that.
And going back to that story about that woman on UCLA, if she came in and told me that story, I would hire her on the spot, by the way. I really would. And I know we're coming up on time, and I mean, I could talk to you about this stuff forever, but can you talk a little bit about your program?
Sure. So one thing that I do is the book is really the core of that. It's available on Amazon and you can do that. But I also do workshops as well, team workshops, and they're very interactive as well in terms of, and one thing that's in the back of the book, we didn't dive into it today. We have a long list of walk-on workplace do's and don'ts, right? And so we break down these five, you know, general steps, and then you have all the examples underneath that really dives into specific workplace do's and don'ts. And one of them is sharing job well done notes with coworkers and clients, you know, unsolicited. It's about being a great leader. It's about answering emails promptly, right? And so if anybody's interested in learning more, you can buy the book on Amazon, and all my contact information is in there as well. You can find me, of course, on, you know, LinkedIn as well. And I'm happy to craft the workshop for your team, whether it's for veteran leaders who need a good reminder. And the number one audience for this, just so you know, has been business leaders who have teenage children. And they're like, man, my kid has to read this thing, right? Because this puts it into, as you said earlier, Damon, right? Accessible, relatable terms. So if folks want to do that, I'm more than happy to do that. I'll also make an offer to your listeners if they want to reach out to me. My email is jim@jimroddycba.com. That's ABC backwards. So jim@jimroddycba.com. If they mention this podcast, I'll make sure I send them a couple free chapters from the book, and then we can begin a dialogue and see if they want to learn more about the walk-on method to career and business success.
Jim, I think you're awesome, and I might hit you up to do a book club for my team. So, but you're fantastic, and it was great having you here. And so for all our listeners out there, I know you got a lot of value out of this. So do me a favor, go to whatever platform you're on and text somebody who could benefit from this. Text them this episode and reach out to Jim, get a couple free chapters, but go buy the book. So Jim, thank you so much for being here today. And until next time, everybody, stay curious and keep learning. Have a good day, everybody.